Are you confident that we won't go right again after this crisis, that we might go left?
Oh, I'm not confident about it at all.
Well, you sounded confident a moment ago, and I wanted you to fill us all with hope and optimism.
What I'm saying is that it is a choice, and that left, you know, our system left to its own devices will exploit this crisis to make to deliver a much less equal society than we have right now. It absolutely will try to impose austerity to pay for the corporate bailouts that we're seeing right now. The reason why I have hope, which is different, I think, than being hopeful, the reason why I have hope is because I do think that we're seeing some amazing organizing among very underpaid yet crucial actors in our economy. And I think that we need to be thinking about how we support and amplify those workers in this moment. We also need to recognize that we live in a time of overlapping and intersecting crises, and there is the climate crisis. And so one of the things that we're seeing right now is what is possible when you actually recognize that you are in an emergency.
It is Friday, April 24th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney on fire today, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, that probably wasn't that funny. I shouldn't be saying that. On today's show, the foot soldiers of the GOP death cult were out in force in Harrisburg and other cities across the country this week. Sean was on the ground with the pro-virus spreader troops. It wasn't pretty. And to no one's surprise, the Commonwealth Foundation was supported, well, you know, very supportive and provided safe space for protest organizers and speakers, leading to more questions as to who was behind the COVID caravan. Hey, remember those billions of dollars in last week's round of bailouts that was supposed to keep mom and pop shops business afloat? You remember that? Well, according to new research from Morgan Stanley, yes, Morgan Stanley, $243.4 million of that money went to quite a few publicly traded companies, several that have market values in excess of $100 million. That's one hell of a small business, mom and pop. The money for that small business bailout program, that's kind of known as the Paycheck Protection Program. I mean, they're setting themselves up for right to work right here. Are you giving in this freaking naming of this thing here? But that money ran out last Thursday. Right. So they have the huge bailout. Money goes away. So on the Tuesday night of this week, the Senate passed another $484 billion relief package. Can we just say right now? Yeah, I don't know what else we could do. I mean, there you go. Could you believe it? Well, so yes, they passed that new $484 billion relief package, and the Dems got squat. Several states are looking to slash funding to public higher education in order to pay for skyrocketing unemployment rolls and falling tax revenue from the shutdown. And no, it's not just red states. It's New Jersey. It's New York. It's all over the place, everybody, because we're all into this together, right? And the Right Wing Heritage Foundation released a National Coronavirus Recovery Commission, a commission that they fabricated out of their own frickin' buttholes. But that report calls for the elimination of public schools and the removal of teacher certification requirements, along with traditional right-wing wish lists. Yes, it's a shock doctrine play, taking the blueprint from Hurricane Katrina national. Hey, good thing the White House has the real experts working on its pandemic task force. Reuters just broke the news that back in January, Alex Azar, you know, that corporate shill who's posing as a Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services, that guy? Yeah, well, he appointed one such expert to the task force, Brian Harrison, heading it. Yes, Harrison's years of expertise were in breeding labradoodles. Labradoodles. At least they're cuddly, and they don't shed. Elizabeth Warren's oldest brother, Don Reed, died from COVID-19 on Tuesday evening. Today's second segment, part two, we're kind of breaking things up a little bit this week. In part because Sean has had it with everything in Pennsylvania. No. But today we're going a little cultural in segment two, because Michael Moore just released a new film about his longtime friend and collaborator, Jeff Gibbs. And it's for free on his YouTube page, I believe, to the end of the month. The film is called Planet of the Humans, and it is a scathing documentary about the collaboration between big green organizations and woke capitalism to dupe us all. Yep, last night I watched it with the help of my friends at Free Will. Yes, two of them. Big cans. And it was a doozy.
Ralphius.
Yeah. It was, it was a sharing size because, you know, it does have a skull on its label. But we're going to talk a little bit about that because there were some definite problems with the films, but at the core of it is something that Naomi Klein has been arguing now for years. In our national leadership, we've got Nancy Pelosi, yes, went on the Late Late Show with James Corden this week to talk about her wonderful world of chocolate, ice cream, and did it all in front of a pair of $20,000 refrigerators. Yes, she did. That's right. And I'm sorry, but all the whining that has taken place from the Democrats that the Trump campaign took that and weaponized it in a campaign ad, I don't know what the hell you expected. In the middle of a coronavirus outbreak, in the middle of a national crisis, you're going to go on and show everybody how you can order cartons and cartons of individually packaged ice cream for your $20,000 freezers. I don't know what you think you're in touch with, but it's not the rest of us. Don't have any opinion about that, though. Coming off her chocolate high, Pelosi bypasses Katie Porter to oversee the stimulus funds in favor of one of her old friends, Donna Shalala. After all, Shalala has Rachel Platten's fight song on her phone. That'll get it done. And a new study shows that Sean Hannity's show actually helps spread the coronavirus. Thanks, Vox. Yes, not only does it help it, but Sean Hannity, if you watch Sean Hannity, there's actually differentiations within Fox News. If you watch Sean Hannity, you're more likely to come down, 25% more likely to come down with the coronavirus than you do if you're watching Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson is the rational actor on Fox News. It's the only, right? And guess which guy Donald Trump watches? Just saying.
Sean Hannity.
There you go. You know what we got to say about all these people?
You are an idiot.
Yes, that should be the theme song for what was happening in Harrisburg on Monday, too. Yes. But today's last call, we got a happy 30th birthday to the Hubble Telescope. Yes, there's the Science Channel released a new documentary on Sunday, I believe, and it's called Hubble, the 30 Years of Discovery. Pretty fantastic. I was actually watching some of looking at some of the images of, say, the nebula and everything like this. Like, you know, again, my kids and a lot of folks, well, you, I mean, grew up on the images of the Hubble as kind of like when you're studying space, right? I was looking at stuff that has happened before the Hubble telescope. You still had images of a lot of these things, but you never got the kind of clarity and the kind of amazing pictures you got before that space telescope went online. So it's amazing. And this summer, the James Webb telescope is actually going to be launched. I think it's this summer. It's going to be launched. It's going to actually, I don't know if it's going to replace the Hubble telescope, but it's going to add to their dimensions. Anyway, it's going to go off and geeking forever. The first lantern fly was spotted in PA. Time to get stomping. Get work out some of those frustrations. Stay at home and kill bugs. There you go. And I hope all of you are recovering from 420. Just saying. It's hard to tell what that dry cough is all about this week. So that's complicated matters quite a bit. And Free Will has released its it's about to be summer favorite, Mango Wheat. Once again, it is back in stock, and you can pick that up at Free Will's online store. I want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in Dish Network, DirecTV, through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure that you're checking out and downloading Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to his show live on Twitter and Facebook. He streams it live. I think it's 9 o'clock Monday through Friday. And once again, I want to kind of say thank you up front this week to our newest member, John, who became a member last week. I forgot to mention him at the top of the show. Didn't get to it to the close of that first segment. But thank you, John, for becoming a member of Raging Chicken and helping keeping this operation going. Because if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, the fight for the future in 2020. And we're all in for the fight. Now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Well, Sean, man, the sounds were, I mean, I got some sounds from the echoing chambers of Harrisburg this week.
You are an idiot!
Holy moly. I don't know how we can start any other place but there, because that really just opens up on the entire week that this was.
Well, I would like to preface it by saying that Monday was also 420. So I made sure to smoke a really fat joint before I went over there.
I'm sorry, a big fat, what was that?
A fat blunt.
Oh, God. So, because that protects you? That's like, you know, doing kind of witchy magic stuff?
It helped me cough a lot when I was there. Mm-hmm. You know, I became a super spreader.
Yes, exactly. Great. Great. That's great. Everyone's very happy for you now.
Now, in all seriousness, big rally happened on Monday.
Can I ask you a question? Just like more like a factual question about that on Monday, because I mean, I watched, obviously I saw your pictures and I saw, you know, I watched a lot of the video that was going on. I mean, how would you like compare the numbers of people that showed up for this with, say, for example, some of the larger, say, budget cut rallies or labor rallies that took place there?
I mean, I think like close to like 500 to 1,000 people showed up.
Yeah, so because it looked like a fairly substantial crowd, but it was kind of hard to tell from some of the camera.
Well, so the thing is, it's like they closed off the Capitol steps for everyone. They pushed them all the way down towards the street. If the rally was on the Capitol steps, I think the steps would have swallowed them up completely, and it mm-hmm. would have looked a lot like more
That's what
sparse
I was wondering. Yeah, okay.
Than what it was. I mean, there was probably like 400 to 1,000 people there by the time it was going. This is not a protest. This is not a movement. This is a completely astroturf movement. I think we should probably get that like out of the way right off the top. You know, like this protest was started by these Doerr brothers, Chris Doerr and his two brothers, who are right wing grifters, gun extremists from other states, from Ohio, and they launched a bunch of Facebook groups across the country. They launched a bunch of petitions across the country and a bunch of websites across the country simultaneously once this happened. And if you looked at like their websites they launched, like reopenpa.com or reopenminnesota.com, mn.com, it went right to their gun websites with a pushing a petition to reopen the state and then driving people to give them money. So you have these right-wing grifters from out of state, pretty much from like Idaho, Minnesota, Ohio, pushing this grift, you know, because everyone's doing it these days on the right wing. And then you have a second phase to it where this is astroturf by the right wing billionaire groups that are in this state. We got video of an organizer, an MC of the event, going in and out of the Commonwealth Foundation building. And we also have video of Aaron Bernstein going into there. Their excuse afterwards was saying that they're everyone using blame people use the bathroom. So, you know, as my friend said, he's used the bathroom there a couple times, and you get to wipe your ass with $100 bills.
That's the best thing about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think only friends and family get to use those bathrooms. They weren't gonna let me use the bathrooms. I don't know if they're like gold plated seats or not, or platinum, I'm not sure. But, you know, we'll see.
Well, I mean, did you actually, you know, ask them politely if you can actually use their bathrooms? I think they probably
would have walked. No, I didn't, because their doors were locked the whole time.
They were. That's strange.
Yes. So in order to get in, you had to bang on the window, on the office window for Matt Briette to let you in.
Oh, I didn't realize that he had doorman experience.
Yeah, no, he was doorman. Yep. Yep, he was there. You know, like, You know, it was a funny thing about Matt Briette being there. He was there. He just wasn't at the protest. He was in his office. You see, Matt Briette has no problem stoking the flames, promoting this, writing op-eds, going after the governor, and pushing these conspiracy theories. But he, like, didn't have his proper PPE ready. You know, he didn't bring his tampon or his menstrual pads there.
Oh, man,
and
that's a bummer.
Didn't want to... What's that?
That's a bummer. Poor guy. I mean,
yeah, no.
He missed out on all that because he forgot, like, you know, his...
He left the tampon at home.
Oh, man.
And didn't want to go to the protest, so...
Well, you know, he does have a reputation to uphold, so he didn't want to get a little mixed too much with, you know, with the rabble, especially if he didn't have his specially home-designed DIY face protections.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, come on. Because the guy is, you know, look, I mean, he's a self-made guy, right? I mean, he's a self-made guy, liberty for all, individual guy.
Pulled himself up by bootstraps type, yeah. You know.
Yeah, heavily bankrolled bootstraps. But still, I mean, I just, you know, I mean.
Getting like $500,000 a year.
It's hard being that guy. I mean, look, can you imagine? I mean, look, the humiliation that he must have faced simply to sit there and being, like, demoted to be, like, you know, you're, God, a freaking daily doorman, for all Christ's sake, for the protest. Instead of being, like, the guy who was out in front leading the whole thing. No. No.
Well, that's the whole entire point about astroturfing. You don't actually don't want to be seen there. Or you don't want to be seen helping people out.
Or his corporate overlords were not kind of giving him the respect that he was due, and they made him be the doorman just to put him back in his place. He's got a hard life, Sean. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I think I saw some pictures, like, through the windows of him in there. Like, he was, like, forced, like, he was so, got so bored at one point that he just had to polish his head. Because that was, like, that's all he could do, right? And then he realized he was polishing his head with one of the sponges that he was using as face protection, and that screwed everything up. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, if anyone wants to do some deep diving on Briette, you can, if you do, if you look hard enough, you'll find pictures of him when he had hair on the internet. Just saying.
Well, that's another part of his fall, right? I mean, he's at one point
he actually looks a lot better.
At one point, he had a real handsome head of hair, and, like, you know, this is what God did to him: smited him, Sean. No wonder he doesn't care about anybody else anymore. He was smited for his hair.
That might be me when I'm, like, in my 40s.
You're going to be standing on you're going to go up to the Commonwealth Foundation, and Briette's going to be on one side of the door, and you're at the other side of the door, and you could play mirror with him. I think that would confuse him enough. He'd be like a bird running into a window.
I'll be rocking the 1980s goatee.
There you go. Hey, don't knock
it. No offense to you.
Man, I'm rooted in the 80s. I'm staying in the 80s. I got no problem with that. I've got no hip credentials and don't want them.
but no, I mean, like, it, okay, so, like, get back on track with this.
Yeah, the
rally was fucking insane. Just like the people that showed up. It was not a rally to reopen the economy. It was a fucking Trump rally.
Yeah.
Like, everything from extreme gun rights people, anti-abortion activists, neo-Nazis, you know, the right-wing coalition that we're normally seeing at these events showed up.
Well, I mean, that's what it looked like. You know, that's exactly what it looked like to me. I mean,
yes.
It was like, I mean, you know, everything from the, you know, the pickup trucks laden with, like, home, all the flags from Don't Tread on Me to, you know, Trump 2020, all that kind of garbage.
Okay. So have you seen the memes with that flag?
What, with the truck or the
Don't Tread on Me flag?
No. Which one? What?
So people have been making memes, with, like, a respirator coming out of the snake's mouth and says patriotic choking noises.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, what was
the other one?
That's crazy. What was the other one?
Yes.
There was that one big tractor trailer, that one truck that was going by that said, like...
Jesus is my vaccine.
Something like, yeah, Jesus vaccine or something like this on the front of it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And then there was, like, a big cargo van that had, like, a bunch of white nationalists, dancing white nationalists. And,
right.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, it was, like, fucking Woodstock for these people.
Well,
and good for them, because they probably haven't been out of the house for a few weeks. Or, no, they probably have been out of the house for the last few weeks, as it fucked governors with stay-at-home orders. And, you know, totally looking to see a rural pandemic in the next 3 weeks. Like, no one was wearing masks or gloves.
Right.
You had two groups of different types of Republican legislators there. The ones who were, like, willing to just jump in the fucking crowd without, like, gloves or masks on, which were, like, your useful idiots, like Mastriano, a couple of, like, someone I posted a photo online. I had people messaging me, like, you know, it's a state rep. You just put on blast. You didn't know it. I'm like, oh, great.
Well, who is the guy? Who is the guy from out in Beaver County? Who is out? He was one of the ones who's being interviewed at one point by Dore.
I have no clue.
Oh, maybe that wasn't your picture. So there was a representative from.
And he's just shaking everyone's hands.
Yeah. Well, no.
Or was it my photo with him, like talking?
The back of him. Yeah. Yeah. Who was that?
Well, that was me. So, like, it was Dore and Mastriano.
Right. And who was?
That was a state rep from York County in the center.
Oh, that was York County.
Yeah, York.
I'm sorry. I thought there was. So I think there was another. I guess it wasn't that guy. I saw another picture of one of the representatives that came out in support of it was from Beaver County, out where there's been that huge outbreak in, say, nursing homes and everything like that, a major cluster out there, coming out, you know, in favor of spreading, I guess. It's yeah. Pretty. I mean, it's this kind of moment that really. I don't know. I mean, it shows you how badly broken things are.
It shows you how badly broken things are. And I also don't think the optics of these protests, like, you haven't really heard anything about them for the rest of the week now. Like, they happen Monday and that's it. And, like, I mean, these people are an extreme minority to begin with at the baseline. Like, only 25%, like, an overwhelming, like, 66.75% to 75% of the country, people still want to remain in lockdown until they feel safe. These people want to fucking reopen. These are a minority within their minority of their group. No, and, like, you know, one of the things, like, we concentrated on this week was to explain to news reporters, to work them and tell them that, no, like, these people are not, this is not a movement. This is not, like, here's why it's not a movement. Commonwealth Foundation involvement, the Dore brothers involvement. You know, these are AstroTurf. These are people who are grifters. You know, like, you have DeVos family getting involved in Michigan and other states. Like, so it's not a protest. It's not a movement. This was a Trump rally. Saw some of the most racist, vile signs you could think of. Yep. I took a picture of the one guy holding up a Tom Wolf with a Hitler stash. Yep. And Albert, it's it. Work will set you free. Which is on the gates of Auschwitz.
Right.
Like, these are the type of people that, like, yeah, like, that was there. I saw people who were probably RAM members.
Remind everybody what RAM is.
RAM is a very vicious white nationalist organization. I believe they had the mask with the skulls on their face, which is what typical RAM members wear.
Yep.
Either that or, like, or Adam Waffen was there and stuff like that. Like, no, like, these weren't, like, mom and pop people. And the people who did show up, you know, looked like they were pretty, like, you had that section, but you also had a strong section of, like, Republican or people who showed up who are also, like, pretty wealthy and have a good bit amount of money and showed up, like, and had the privilege to show up.
Yep.
For this. Like, very posh, like, dresses and stuff like that, and apparel. Like, it was just, it was kind of interesting to see one of the former Republican staffers that I follow on Twitter. He even put out, like, you know, I support people's right to protest, but this isn't going to make you look good in the end. And I think optically this didn't make anyone look good for showing up. And really, like, this is who our opposition is, and we don't have to fucking listen to these people if we have to reopen the state or right. when we go to reopen the state.
Right. And this is what concerns me. What concerns me is this, is that I agree. And actually, you know, my wife and some other folks are consistently reminding me that these people, most people do not agree with these people, that they are extreme minority and all this other kinds of stuff. Right. So even people who are not, like, progressive, right, do not agree with what's going on. Like, everyday people, like, in my neighborhood, for example. Right.
Like, we're also seeing the numbers coming out. Trump numbers are tanking right now. Is handling his any bump that he got in approval ratings is disappeared.
Right.
Since the beginning of this, his numbers on handling this are falling economically. And, you know, like, his whole plan is to pick fights with Democratic governors who are now polling 30 points higher than he is in their home states.
Right. But here's my concern, right? My concern is this, right? It's a it's just coming from the history of the way that, say, Democratic Party leadership has dealt with this stuff, is that either one of two directions in this kind of scenario right now. Like, direction number one, looking at those poll numbers that exactly that you're talking about and believing that, like, some sort of natural force will automatically now operate. The magic polls will automatically lead to kind of, say, Trump being removed and all this other stuff. That'll happen kind of naturally, that they don't need to do anything. They just need to let kind of, like, Trump be Trump kind of thing, right? That's the one direction. The other direction is looking at, and, you know, again, I think that the strategy behind these protests from, say, the Trump organization is not, like, is not a majority one, right? It's a way of kind of, like ramping up and creating kind of optics for this base.
Setting a narrative.
Right? Exactly. Setting a narrative, the optics for the base, and kind of projecting this kind of, like, projecting the movement in such a way that will scare, right? Well, two things. Will scare some folks in Democratic Party leadership so that they feel that they have to somehow respond to these people, like, as rational actors, right? That they have to have a compromise with the nut jobs, right? Or that it will kind of, like, make everybody so kind of, like, you know, depressed that this is what's going on, that they'll disengage. And those are my concerns. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I mean, thank God the organizing is continuing on, even the difficulty. But my concern is when you see stuff like, you know, even Governor Wolf, right, starting to make these, you know.
I get, like, he has to put out, like, some sort of, like, plan because people want a plan of action. But, like, I think we should also have this realistic conversation. As soon as we start lifting our hand off the valve, this thing is going to blow up again.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like, I would rather take the wait and see approach, like, wait until the end of the month, because, you know, we're seeing what happens in Georgia right now. We're seeing what they're doing in Florida and these southern states. Like, you know, these people are reopening their states because they do not want to put the investments into their social safety nets and help out the people that are unemployed.
Right.
They would rather have people dying for the economy simply so they don't get an unemployment check in the mail, or that they can just take them off the rolls altogether.
Exactly. I mean, here's my other concern about this, though, too, as well, is, like, so is that I don't want to go here, but I'm going to go here. So it's like one of the problems here, and I mentioned this on the show last week, right? We didn't kind of focus on it a whole lot, but I kind of brought this up last week after we saw these first outbursts of these protests. The fact is that what is happening right now already exposes the kind of, like, the utter brokenness of the system, right? And then when we have people that are put into a situation in which that their livelihoods are going to depend upon having some source of income over the long haul, right? What you're going to have right now, yes, those people out in the streets are just a bunch of, like, death cultists, like COVID-19 spreaders. That's who they are, right? But the pressure will increase over the summer as if we start to find, as is expected, that this stay-at-home stuff is going to be long-standing, and that even if you start opening up, there is no guarantee that people are actually going to show up at these businesses. I think you're exactly right, Sean, that the reason why you have this big push to open up has to do because the governors of these, especially red states, do not want their unemployment rolls to kind of expand. So they're just looking for a way to just kind of, like, throw these people to the wolves. And so, but what happens then when, if we do not have an aggressive, right, kind of policy, at least our policy articulation on the left, or even the centrist Democrats for that matter, to respond to this stuff, there's going to be more and more people are going to be forced into a situation that they're going to need to go back to work for their livelihoods. And that will be a spiral out of control. And so my concern is that, you know, this middle road approach, and lack of kind of strong Democratic voices. I mean, even look, I mean, Andrew Cuomo is getting a lot of props right now for going out and talking about this, but he's also cutting back on Medicaid. He's talking about, like, what is it, 10?
He's cutting Medicaid to fuck over New York City.
Yeah. I mean, he's talking about, like, major cuts are going to be start unrolling next week in the state and state support service. I mean, that is not going to help. And so there's going to be legitimate, like, resistance, right, to these stay-at-home orders. And yes, it will put us all at risk, but in the absence of what? I mean, in the absence of any kind of social safety net, which
there's
has been
no federal government right
exactly.
now.
Right.
you know, like one of the things that we're seeing, and really, like, I mean, at this point, the Democrats have leverage. They don't realize it.
They're
not using it.
They've got more leverage than they get. I got this sound clip from Crystal Ball, which was making exactly this kind of point that they're that you know, it's like this. It's like, this is how they react.
Oh, he's a doctor.
You know, it's like,
Michael Brooks had a really good line this week. Like, you know, when your enemies sink them, toss them an anvil. But like, I get that. Like, I mean, like, they're building an incompetence campaign against Trump. But, like, what the fuck are you doing to prevent the post office from shutting down?
Yeah.
Like, post office shuts down. We're not having an election in June.
Right.
I mean, in November. Like,
I mean, why do you think, you know, look, everybody knows that Trump is an absolute, like, freaking buffoon and ass, right? But that does not mean that you've got, you know, like, this is what I said, why I put this Heritage
Miller
Foundation.
And Bannon back in the White House.
Exactly.
Like, they're like, you know, you shut down the post office, we're not having an election. You know, you sell the post office off, you privatize it, we're not having an election. Like, just get that through your heads. Like, this is the last. They will go after, like, they see destroying the post office because people are going to want vote by mail. Vote by mail is extremely popular. It's like supported by 3/4 of the fucking country.
Yep.
Like, you know, Republicans, like, they. Yeah, I mean, it's, and vote by mail also shows no distinct advantage to one side or the other because everyone uses it. So it's, I mean, like, but they want people either to have to face voter suppression in November to steal the election or not have it at all.
Yeah.
And by voter suppression, like, destroying the post office will be the biggest single act of voter suppression in this election, period. So,
and you know, look, I mean, there's a reason why.
Why are the Democrats folding on this?
I don't know. I have no idea. And this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. It's like, you know, this is
like Donna Shalala.
Jesus Christ.
Who didn't disclose stock sales last year is going to be leading the group to overlook the, like, she didn't disclose her stock, like, off when she was selling stocks after she got elected, and she is now leading the oversight committee. Like the oversight.
And let's be clear,
Katie Porter asked for it.
She wanted it. She's proven herself to be able to kind of like cut through the bullcrap
and
be able to hold people accountable.
Pelosi doesn't want oversight of rich people.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Well, Sean, it, God forbid somebody got into her freaking freezer and saw
The individual ice cream packets.
And how much she got of that from the Trump bailout.
I saw that, that pissed me off, like, when I saw the video itself. And then my friends were all sharing it like it was something that was good. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you think this is good? like I knew that was bad optics when I saw it last week when she did that. And now people are complaining about the Trump campaign using that as an attack ad.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you just handed that to them. You've got people who are hurting, right? And Trump, you know what Trump does. Trump and this and the right wing, what they do is they pretend to be populists, right? They pretend to care about kind of everyday people. And that we all know, because you're listening to this podcast, you better as well know that that's a whole load of crap, right? That's for sure. But they play to that. And then they talk about the coastal elites, right, who are out of touch with mainstream Americans, right? How better to prove that to everybody by having Nancy Pelosi go on and sit on the James Corden show in front of two $20,000 refrigerators? And he asked, well, what are you going to share from your home? Right. Oh, chocolate. Brings out a big bag of chocolate, a big basket of chocolate, and talks about just being restocked in their freezer and opens it up and having like dozens of individual cups of like top-notch ice cream within there and talk about how much she loves this stuff. I mean, that you couldn't have written that better, right? And you didn't even need to kind of do a hack job on the interview in order to kind of like make it, weaponize it into a campaign ad for Trump. That she did it for us. And the fact that she doesn't recognize that, and you couple that with exactly what you're saying, you couple that with the fact that Katie Porter was passed over in favor of Donna Shalala, right? A Clinton insider and friend of Pelosi. who has no credentials and, if anything, has anti-credentials for this, given all her conflicts of interest, right? That's just baffling to me. It's just baffling to me.
No, it shows you that they are willing to protect your Democrats, who are literally like the people who run the power, the party brokers. They're like your Montgomery County Democrats, your Democrats who live on the main line, you know, your Democrats who make seven figures a year, who own stock. Like, that's who Donna Shalala, that's the part of the Democratic Party she came from. And I guarantee you, like, that's the network that she hangs out in when she's in Florida.
Oh, I'm
she's
sure.
Not, you know, like, Katie Porter's not in that circle of friends. No. Like, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, no, Donna Shalala is probably in Marcel Groen's circle, is probably in people like, you know, the movers and the shakers in that we hear, see here in Pennsylvania and other states.
Yeah.
And no, it just shows you how fundamentally fucked up the Democratic Party is in general.
Exactly. Now, I have to say this, is that given that, and given the fact that there is an absolute lack of leadership at the top of the Democratic Party, that's, I mean, we've got to reinforce this over and over and over again, that that should not be the reason to disengage at this point. That should be the reason to go full throttle ahead. Right. I mean, this would be the engagement, making sure that you are more invested and more involved and making sure that we get, you know, progressives and a new breed of leadership that's, you know, in the fall. We need it, because these people are showing themselves to be kind of incompetent and incapable of meeting the moment. And I can't think of a better example of not being able to use the leverage that they've got in the midst of a crisis and capitalize on that for everyday people, working families, and to expand the social safety net. And instead, they're basically allowing Trump to kind of like write his corporate platform
bailouts
for the fall.
They're allowing the corporate bailouts to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, like, they hold a chamber. They're responsible for it.
Well, they do. Here's the thing. And you have, you know, Naomi Klein. It was Naomi Klein being interviewed by Mehdi Hasan. You heard in the sound at the beginning of the show today. And in that interview, Naomi Klein makes this really good point, where she's saying that, look, what the Democrats should never have allowed is they never should have allowed the coupling of the corporate bailouts with the small business and the kind of like the bailouts for people. Right. They should allow that, because basically what that does, and they could have held this up. Right. There was no reason that Nancy Pelosi had to do that in the House. She had control over that. Right. It only would have taken one senator. Right. In the Senate, in order to kind of block that from that coupling to happen. Because what happens is that what the Democrats fear more than anything else. Right. And this is what Crystal Ball was arguing this week, is that they want to be like seen as the bad guy. Right. Or seen as the one who's holding things up, because they're so afraid of that. And so, the way that the vote was structured then is that if the Democrats were to vote against this bailout on the grounds for the corporate funds, what would have happened from the right is it would have been like, you're leaving all these people hanging out to dry when they need people more than ever. Democrats claim to care about everybody, but look what they're not allowing for the bailout to come and help everyday people. That's the way the narrative was structured. And that happened because of the way that the bailout was put forward. Right. And so, you know, this is a big problem. And, you know, I don't know what to do about it exactly at this point. I mean, frankly, it looks like the writing, it's already written about what's going to happen. And because Pelosi has shown that she is not willing to fight, and she is not willing to be a kind of position as the bad guy, bad gal, whatever you want to say in this fight. And Schumer's no better. Frankly, you know, you've got
AOC. Mitch McConnell, who wants to let the states go bankrupt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, and this is why you got the Heritage Foundation stuff. Like, this is a perfect example of the shock doctrine that we always talk about on the show. The Heritage Foundation just put out this report this week called the National Coronavirus Recovery Commission. There is no freaking commission. They made it up, right, for themselves so they could produce this report as a way. What's that?
for as a messaging trick.
And as a policy platform that could be picked up and utilized, right? And that's what Heritage Foundation has always done. They've always understood the importance of driving the discourse and conversation. And it works in this kind of environment even better because there is no brain trust in the Trump administration. The brain trust is happening from these private entities that are kind of pushing from the outside. Where do you think his Supreme Court appointments came from? The Heritage Foundation, from the Federal Society. That's where that came from. That was the approved list that he waved in front of everybody's face. That's what this is being designed to do. It's saying you need a program going forward. Your program going forward is to basically complete like the kind of like, you know, dismantling of the administrative state, as Steve Bannon loves to say. Right. To take this out. And that's why they're calling for the elimination of public schools, the removal of teacher certification requirements. Right. This is the moment where they're going to try to pull the biggest shock doctrine we've ever seen in this country. Right. And, you know,
I mean, they're going to try to bankrupt the states to intentionally.
Yes.
Go after the pensions funds and make them sell off any private assets or public assets that they have. Like lotteries or, you know, liquor stores or public education, higher education. You know, like this is a cash grab on the state and federal level if we allow states to start going bankrupt.
Yep. You know, this is what my friend Rachel Reeder and I wrote about in our book called Democracies to Come. Right. And we talked about this, and this is kind of what it's this kind of the cycle of despair. And this is how the shock doctrine works. Right. He says, here's a big problem. Right. Everyone is outraged about what this Trump administration or who, you know, fill in the blank, whatever is going on. We can't believe we're outraged, we're upset, we're really pissed off. We get like into it and then particulars and start to say, oh, my God, I don't know how we're going to be able to get ourselves out of this. So maybe the other side has got a point, or maybe we're just going to have to, you know, suck it up and kind of like tighten our belts. Maybe the whole idea about, you know, having all this public funding is not what we need. And it really sucks that we were going to have to get rid of public education, or we're going to have to cut, you know, Medicare. We're going to have to. It really sucks. But unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. And so they throw their hands up in the air and say, this is really unfortunate and it's upset. And then, boom, here you go. You go in and you wipe out the public sector. I mean, this is what it is. This is what the shock doctrine is. This is why everybody needs to read the shock doctrine and disaster capitalism by Naomi Klein. You need to understand what that's about because this is the freaking playbook. Or just listen to this podcast. I mean, then you'll get it every single freaking week. But yeah. So yeah, I don't know, Sean. That's you start with these nut jobs, and you start with kind of like what is really going to be producing a kind of crisis. Right. Because there's, you know, I mean, the only thing that, you know, I wonder if they're going to be able to kind of contact trace the people that were at that rally on Monday. Seriously.
I know that's something. OK, so this is not what's going to be able to happen. Like, we're not going to be able to reopen the state in Pennsylvania, because you look at the governor's plan and like testing is a huge part of it. And, you know, if people have been talking about testing. We need testing. No. Like, first of all, have you been listening to Ostenheimer or the Hostel, or you know I'm talking about the one?
Yeah.
I don't know his name, but he's been going on. He's like, no, first of all, we need to have one test, a test by the federal government, not 90 different tests that are not accurate and stuff like that. They're giving off false readings. And then we're running out of chemical reagents to like,
yeah,
we have to set up a program to manufacture these chemical reagents in order to have these tests to be viable. Like, we're not going – this isn't something that's just going to happen on a flip of a switch.
Right, exactly.
And that's when, like, you know, Governor Wolf, yeah, you can go, like, reopen or allow construction workers to go back, you know, send them to their deaths, you know, at that point. You know, there's no way you can be socially distant on a on a work site. And you're going to tell me the bosses are going to take time to make sure that these construction sites are CDC approved? When they have millions of dollars of capital to fucking move and, you know, shit the build? No, they're not.
No.
I mean, projects are 2 months behind right now. You think they're going to do that? Like...
No. I mean, look, my one hope in the midst, if I want to be kind of on the optimistic side of things, is that, you know, again, you've been talking about this and you've said this and you're probably right about this, is that, look, he had to put something out there, right? But, you know, ultimately, you know, it's going to be the science is what's going to drive this. And I can only hope that's going to be the case. But
I think we should I don't think we should be throwing Republicans bones.
No, exactly.
when clearly like they're not like following science, where, you know, like, they're putting the profits of themselves, you know, a bunch of these Republicans last week who voted on these bills, surprise, surprise, they all have side hustles. They either own real estate companies, they own land, they own construction companies. You know, all the people fucking pushing for these bills in the state house all own second companies.
Yep.
That are involved in these industries.
Yep. Hey, man.
I mean,
it's a good gig if you can get it.
If you're Senator Tommy Tomlinson or his daughter, Casey, who just got elected to the House, I mean, business is booming right now. There are funeral home directors down in the southeastern, down in Bucks County. Like, hey, let's reopen the businesses so we can start.
Sean, are you trying to suggest that a senator who's running he wants somebody to die? How could you? I'm grabbing my pearls right now. But, yeah. No, there you go, man. There you go.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, there we have it. So the other stuff that we had up top, just, you know, when you start seeing, you know, Elizabeth Warren announced that her brother died this week, just going to show you that this is absolutely everywhere. So our thoughts go out to kind of her family, too, as well. And frankly, they go out to every single person who's kind of lost somebody, has not been able to be there for the funerals, who's not been able to be there to comfort each other in the midst of these kind of dramatic losses. And I know that is happening all over the place here in Pennsylvania, as, you know, cases are, you know, people want to talk about saying the flattening the curve. But all the indications are is like, yes, we've gotten through some, maybe a peak, not necessarily the peak, but a peak in the number of cases. But we also remember there's a 2 to 3 week, you know, time period between when the onset of the cases and when we're going to see the deaths. So you'd be prepared for a pretty kind of sobering week or two. So anyways, we're going to go into our kind of second segment today. Before we do that, I want to remind you to become a member of Raging Chicken. Go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. And we'll be back right after this break. And we're going to get into a little bit of Planet of the Humans by Michael Moore and all the outrage that has come around with that. This is Kevin Mahoney. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1999. A headline from the Los Angeles Times declared dock crews to halt work in support of death row inmate. Up and down the West Coast, the ports stood silent. The International Longshoremen and Warehousemen's Union had called their members off the job for a one-day strike. They did this to protest the death sentence for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Mumia was a black activist and journalist who was on death row accused of killing a police officer in Philadelphia. Yet many peace and justice activists in the United States and beyond have questioned the evidence leading to his conviction. In October of 1998, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court rejected an appeal from Mumia. Jack Heyman, a member of the executive board of the Longshoremen's Union in San Francisco, explained the context of his union's protest in a piece he wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle. He wrote, quote, "Labor and minorities share a common history of being victimized by the criminal justice system in this country. Both have long been aware of police repression and the unequal use of the death penalty against minorities and the poor. From the Haymarket Martyrs, who rallied workers for the 8-hour day, to Harry Bridges, the Longshore Union leader targeted for deportation for being a red, to the Black Panther Party, whose program of self-defense put it on the FBI's list." In San Francisco, longshoremen chanted, "An injury to one is an injury to all. Free Mumia Abdul-Jamal." Protests against Mumia's execution took place across Europe in cities like London, Madrid, Dublin, and Amsterdam, and by unions in France, Brazil, and South Africa. After 30 years on death row, Mumia's sentence was commuted to life without parole. He is still in prison.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here back once again with Sean Kitchen. Sean is furiously responding to a bunch of his kind of online kind of engagements. So I'll ease him into this segment.
In case you watched my Twitter this week.
A little active.
Yeah, we got this consultant to block like five of us.
Yeah, I kept on seeing those pop up. seems like you had a good degree of healthy frustration going on this week too.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Yeah, so I wanted to put this on. So this is no doubt. I was, of course, late last night. I'm like messaging Sean. I know Sean's sleeping, but it's like, I'm like, dude, you got to watch this film. So Michael Moore, as you know, Michael Moore has been having this podcast, been called Rumble. And it's been a really good podcast. I mean, it's, you know, some things, you know, again, Michael Moore is Michael Moore. But there's a new film that's been released by this guy, Jeff Gibbs. Jeff Gibbs has been a longtime collaborator of Michael Moore. I believe he's actually from Michigan. I'm not sure if they were friends growing up or not. But Gibbs has actually worked with him on Bowling for Columbine, I think of some of the other films or whatever. This is Jeff Gibbs' first documentary. It's his first film. And Michael Moore is the executive director of it. It's a film. It's called Planet of the Humans. And it's a pretty scathing documentary about the collaboration between big green organizations and, you know, the kind of woke capitalists that are out there. One of the things that happens in this film, first of all, it's free, and Michael Moore released it. This was kind of like why it made big news this week, or some news this week, is that he released it for free on YouTube. We talked about this on his podcast, that they worked with YouTube to see if they could release the film on YouTube first. And I believe at the end of the month, I don't know if it's the end of April or the end of May, the film will remain free there. And then eventually it's going to have a theatrical release too as well. But it's basically a look at, you know, a lot of what you saw in Naomi Klein's book around, This Changes Everything, about how we can't basically, you know, capitalism our way out of the climate crisis is really what comes at the core of it. This guy, Jeff Gibbs, he's been a environmental reporter for a few decades now, and has been on the scene kind of asking a whole series of kind of really kind of uncomfortable questions, right? There's this great scene in the film where they're interviewing at the launch of the Chevy Volt, right? He's there kind of reporting on this and says things like, you know, basically, you know, they launch it out and goes up and talks to the woman who's ahead of the launch event or whatever, about what's going on. And he said, okay. And he asked the right question, like, where, you know, so you plug it in, like, where's that power come from? And she's like, oh, it comes from the building. And like, well, where's the building gets its power? And it comes from, you know, oh, the power plants from Lansing, Michigan. And Lansing, Michigan, and the power plants are run by something like 80 to 90% coal plants, right? And they talk to then kind of the power generator and things like this, right? They say, well, we've got a great solar array down the street in Lansing that, you know, we've got over there. So we're obviously not talking about that here. We can go down the solar array and check it out. So he goes to the solar array and talks to the guy who runs the solar array and says that, yeah, this solar array is here and it can power maybe about 10 homes. Over the course of the year. So it's that kind of look into that. And I thought the more important part of it was when they started looking at the production of things like solar panels and wind turbines and things like this, and about the extractive resources that go in order to produce those things. And it was very sobering. And I would say the first half of the film for me was like setting it up, being kind of like, look, there's the growth agenda is over if we hope to save the planet.
Okay. So here's the one thing. I know I just interrupted you, but like,
no, go for it.
Here's the one thing, like with renewables, and if not renewables, then what? Like, we need to extract materials to make these things. Like, that's just like, I mean, that's just a fact. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no, but here's...
We can't sustain ourselves without establishing alternate forms of energy unless you want to go back to, like, egalitarian, like, times. Like...
But here's the point, right? This is the point of the one
and
voice.
Also, like, we're artificially supporting our population. Like, we're artificially supporting, like, our population through our consumer and our extraction and stuff like that. Like,
well,
I mean,
it's like here's the point. Here's the point of this, right? I think this is where we'll get to the critique of the film in a second, right? Because the second part of it, because I think the second part of the film. I really do not like where it ended up for a couple reasons. We'll get into in a second. But there was the point about this, though, right? The point about this, I agree with you, right? I mean,
I've also been watching this, mm-hmm. like reactions to it, and it seems like the people that we've been following, the climate deniers, really just pick up the ball and ran with Michael Moore's like thing and said, you see, like, we shouldn't be pushing for these renewables because of how terrible they are. Like, I don't know, I feel like it reinforced like that whole entire mind frame.
No,
that the
I get it,
has been pushing,
right?
And it's just, yeah,
but this is why the second part of the film was a big problematic. I mean, definitely saw that. I expected when I was watching it last night, that was exactly what was going through my mind, is that this is going to be picked up by some of the people on the rights as justification of kind of going back to fossil fuels,
and then I can see this being used in committee hearings and stuff like that, because that's how these people operate. Like, well, this will ultimately I will see this shit pop up in my work the next time I go to a committee hearing on climate change, and you say, you see, Michael Moore said this, and these people will be waving that flag around completely,
right?
Right,
but actually talking about true things, right, that can be picked up and used kind of like problematic, doesn't mean you should stop telling true things, right? And like, that's what I kept on coming back to into watching especially the first part of the film, is like, look, and this is the key part, right? Is like, if we can only think in pro con, either or, on off thinking, right? Then it's like, all we have renewables or we have fossil fuels. And if there's a problem with renewables, if we can't talk about them as the pure solution that will kind of deliver us into the kingdom come, then therefore we should get rid of them. Right. If that's the only way that we have talking about them stuff, or to say, no, they are the savior of, you know, our Lord, Savior, Jesus Christ of solar panels, and therefore we will kind of embrace them fully with full faith. I don't think we're at a point where we can afford to do that anymore. And this is my point, I'm yes, renewables, absolutely 100%. But at the core, right.
One of the nuclear, we'll have to use nuclear, too.
I know.
I support nuclear. I mean,
I don't see another way around it, but and they completely avoid that entirely in this film, by the way, too, as well. But
I mean, like, nuclear has to be part of a renewable debate. Like, but like, again, the nuclear industry is in a boom bust industry where they keep on putting their hands out to governments to bail themselves out.
Right. Absolutely, but let me.
I mean, it's also a fucked up industry in its own right. But like,
yeah. But let me just finish my point. My point is this, right? My point is this: is that at the core, one of the key moments within this film is when they're talking about our faith that technology and these kind of innovations will not simply save the planet, right? I mean, I think environmentalists, that's where most of us are. But it will enable us to continue our lifestyle and our way of life in the way that it has been. And that's the part that is flawed. We will not be able to continue our lives in the way that we have been. At the core of the problem, I mean, you think about it like this. If we have renewable energy, right, and we're still transporting goods all across the world, right, instead of manufacturing things down the street, right, there is no way that it is sustainable through solar and wind. There's just no way, right? So we have to fundamentally change the way that our economy works and what our assumptions are about our culture.
I mean, I would much rather prefer seeing us find ways of taking cars and electric cars off the street.
Yes.
In favor of bicycling, local, like, bike lanes, or having an established, like, public transit in place.
Absolutely. That's a perfect example of this, right? So this is like...
I mean, because it is very energy intensive process and a highly pollutive process to make these batteries.
Exactly.
And stuff like that. And these are, and it's not like you flip of a switch. I mean, there are environmental trade-offs, period. With any decision we make, there's an environmental trade-off. We go, you know, you need chemicals that are toxic to make this stuff.
Yep.
You need plastics. You're still going to need oil to do this stuff. But it's like, you know, like, let's look at things we can knock out millions of cars and renewable cars by funding stuff like the Keystone Service that goes across the state of Pennsylvania, you know, with Amtrak from Philadelphia to Harrisburg. Support, you know, more local, like, initiatives for public transit instead of, like, having cars everywhere.
Exactly, right? And of course, we have to remember that we are going to have to kind of embrace asteroid mining too as well, and kind of the manufacturing system being set up on the moon, because that's the only way we're going to be able to get the resources and be able to do this. Just saying. That's my galactic capitalism kick. But believe me, I do go in that direction. So anyways, there's a part of this film, and I have to say that first part of the film, Naomi Klein and her husband released a film about This Changes Everything that came out, I think, a year maybe after the book was released. And I personally found the film very disappointing. Okay. I thought it was way too feel-goody, right? It focused on the kind of, like, it seemed to run counter to some of the arguments of the book itself, right? I mean, I was hoping the film was really going to dig into some of the problems that, about the way that we've conceptualized our response to climate change. And Naomi Klein clearly does that in her book. This film, that first part of this film, kind of started to do what I was hoping to see in that documentary from Naomi Klein's book. And to get us focused on kind of our assumptions that, you know, somehow we're going to get out of this scot-free without some kind of fundamental changes, right? It's not, you know, again, as much as I, you know, I drive a hybrid car now, right? Is that going to be a solution? No. It's a drop. It's not even a drop. It's like a spittle vapor thing, whatever, in the kind of overall bucket, right? But I mean, like, well, what's the alternative, right? You could go an electric car, okay, but then you're talking about resource intensive there. Really, what has to happen is we have to change the car culture. And again, and to recognize that this is a long-term, it's not something you could flick a switch on it, but this goes back to a point that Sean was making. Well, I don't know if we were talking about it in the first segment or if we actually talked about it before the show, but this is why we need power, right? Because you cannot do this through ideas alone, right? You has to happen by taking control of the power of the government and fundamentally enacting policies that are going to transform the way our economy works, period. Like, and Jay Inslee, if you remember, go back, we were talking about Jay Inslee's climate change plan, right? You know, early on, you know, obviously he dropped out early in the race. I think he was the first to drop out. But Jay Inslee, he had a segment of his plan that was so, like, foundationally and so amazing. It basically, for example, is that part of the policy would be to make it illegal, right, to export fossil fuels to other countries from this country, right? Now, you might say, oh, nationalism, about it. No, that's not the point. The natural gas industry is an export industry. Most of the natural gas that is kind of comes out of Pennsylvania, that comes out of kind of like Colorado, that comes out of Dakotas, that is for export, right? And the thing is that everyone says, well, you know, the United States can't deal this alone. United States can't do it alone. What about the rest of the world? Well, you want to have real power and influencing the rest of the world, you cut off the supply of natural gas and you invest heavily in renewables. Right. And if the United States is now the largest exporter of natural gas in the world, I believe, right? Or Russia, they always go back and forth with Russia. if that supply is no longer there, then we're forced to deal with alternatives. And then you have an international conversation about how you actually make this happen and you share technologies. This is really important stuff. So anyway, so that's what I think is the important part of it. The bad part of it, of the film, is that Bill McKibben becomes like a straw man target in the film.
Like, is he like a substantial target?
No.
Okay.
He's just, but.
Because a lot of people in the energy, or a lot of people in the environmental movement are like fucking pissed that Bill McKibben was used as a target in this video.
Let's put it, here's the problem. The film is not about Bill McKibben, right? But it does look at, say, well, you know, Bill McKibben, his name is being associated with this particular fund and his partner, you know, and kind of working with some of these folks on Wall Street, some kind of James Blood or something like this. So that, no, that was Gore. That was Gore's working. But anyways, and so this guy, this reporter, you know, Jeff Gibbs, goes in and looks at the SEC filings. Right. I'm like, I was actually thinking of you. I'm like, oh, this is what Sean would do. Go and like dig up the actual financial records to find out what's actually going on, and pulls up, you know, who's part of these different kinds of funds. Right. And says, you know, this is also so problematic. Right. I mean, I think Al Gore, frankly, I think Al Gore is taken down a lot more than McKibben is. Right. But the thing is like, look, McKibben, I think he does. And, and Naomi Klein makes kind of like this point and points us to what Bill McKibben's response is. There is some of the film and some of the interviews that are that he does with Bill McKibben, and he gets him on the street at different places, were taken from some years ago. I think it unfairly positions Bill McKibben as kind of somehow still like supporting biomass as a fuel, which he has clearly stepped away from.
And he apologized for that too a while ago.
Right.
Yes. He's like, I was wrong.
Yep.
The science is showing it's worse. We thought, like, yeah. So it's
right. And so this is the part that, this is a part of the film that, and so while I don't think Bill McKibben was basically, just like the center of the film, the fact that there was not more of these and kind of big environmental leaders that were actually kind of like positioned alongside it made it look, it came across, I think, more as a target of Bill McKibben, simply because, you know, and again, because he's been such a leader. And I think that's it. And the other thing that I would say about the film that was deeply problematic is that there's one interview, short interview, that he actually credits with somebody who's telling the truth. And as Vandana Shiva, right? He sees Vandana Shiva at a protest. And Vandana Shiva, I've been following her since like the 90s. It's like her freaking writing is the best there is, right? Her stuff. And she interviews, and she basically says it plain right back then, right? And he's like, well, someone tell the truth. Why is Vandana Shiva not figured more strongly in this film? And how the hell is it that Naomi Klein gets left out of this film entirely? I mean, Naomi Klein does a better job of the kind of the research into the kind of like woke capitalism stuff around green energy and stuff like that than Jeff Gibbs does. But she's not even mentioned in the film. And so that is deeply problematic. So one, it's free and it's online. So I think it's worthwhile checking this out to seeing what's kind of going on there. And to do something that, I went into this film, I'd listened to the podcast a little bit, you know, ahead of time. So kind of, I had a hunch that there was going to be some issues with this film. I always think there's always a case like that with Michael Moore films to begin with. And I know it's not a Michael Moore film, it's a Jeff Briggs film, but I always run into those kind of issues. So I went in there kind of thinking like, okay, I'm going to try to suspend like the reaction response to stuff. And kind of looking kind of what some of the core of this. And I think for that alone, it's kind of worth it. And I don't think we need to get into kind of on off either or pro con black white kind of thinking about this stuff. We can bring the critiques. Right. And at the same time, we could recognize that the solution. Oh, and I should say the major part about the film that was the biggest problem is that the logical conclusion of that first part of the film that I was talking about, the logical conclusion is like, yep, we can't grow our way out of this stuff, that capitalism is fundamentally at odds with the planet at this point. So and without that, we can do it.
And that's always been an issue within the environmental community, especially among the green groups. You know, like there's been some environmentalists who I've gotten back and forth with, like outside, like when I was interning here in Harrisburg, and I went to a book reading with like a local environmentalist that was doing stuff, and I was pressing them on the issues like, no, we actually have to fundamentally rethink our like economic system here, and all you're doing is telling us to change a light bulb. Like, that's just not going to cut it. And his response was, well, like, pretty much like, you're a socialist and no one's going to embrace socialism on this issue. And this was 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, here's the theory. I was thinking a lot about this too, as well as like, you know, I have to say, some of the socialist responses to this stuff really bother me. Right. Because it gets, it's bothering me increasingly when the response to it, like, I mean, like I just said, I think capitalism is at odds with saving the planet. I believe that 100%, but that is not the platform for me now to stand up and talk about kind of like Marx's crisis of capitalism and suddenly just wanting to kind of like educate the world on dialectical materialism as if that's going to save
us. My whole entire argument was our economic structure cannot support itself.
Exactly.
Because we are, it's dependent upon growth and like everything from the stock market all the way up to production. It's always this constant model of growth. And if we're not growing, the economy is bad. Like, it's time to cut off that valve, that growth valve.
Yep.
And be like, all right, like, these are the resources we have. Like, we are artificially inflating our planet's population. We have overpassed the carrying capacity of this planet, probably, most likely. And I mean, like, we're going to start seeing more stuff like a pandemic like this because of overcrowding, because of interconnectedness, and because of overpopulation. I know, we're going to see more disruptions too. So,
yep. So, anyways, on that happy note. So, one thing,
Fox News.
What's that? Fox News. Yeah. So, we already talked about Nancy Pelosi. We were going to talk about it here, but so we don't have to do that again. Did you catch? I had to put that thing about the fight song. Did you catch that clip of Donna Shalala playing the fight song in that committee hearing?
No, I didn't.
So literally, this is the kind of stuff, like, okay, it was bad enough that Katie Porter was passed over and Donna Shalala, with all her conflicts of interest, like investments in all these banks and all this other kind of garbage, as much of a bad choice that was. So there's film for her. She's starting at this committee. She's like, okay, so we're here, and you've got something, Donna Shalala, right? You know, it was input about this committee and how we're going to handle this stuff. So she goes to her phone, pokes some things on her phone, right? And then what's her face? Rachel Platten's like, this is a fight song. Plays on it. She holds her phone up and plays a song. And then laughs. And that's it.
Okay. So after working in Harrisburg, living in Harrisburg for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and seeing how we don't send our best nor brightest to our halls of state legislature or Congress. That's just my overall like thesis on this stuff.
I just think
we actively kneecap our best and brightest from getting into office for people like Donna Shalala.
Right, and I think that she was chosen because she's from Florida, and they think that's somehow going to have an impact. And she's a Clinton insider. Right. She's part of the Clinton administration.
The Clintonista.
Right. And she's not going to rock the boat. And I think that there was a good chunk of, say, of the Democratic, you know, party.
Like your Montgomery County types, your yep. mainline types who reached saw out to her, Steny Hoyer.
Yeah. Who saw her play that video and thought it was great. It made him feel like, good. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Sean's holding his breath. He's biting his tongue right now.
So, yeah, no. All I'm going to say is I cannot wait to run for state committee in a couple of years just to really piss these people off.
There you go. Well, I'm telling you, it's like, look, and one thing I forgot to say about Donna Shalala, too, is what I really wanted to get in here, too, and where, you know, you talk about this is just as this is political malfeasance of the worst score.
I mean,
is that
also,
Donna like, Shalala? Donna Shalala, from 2015 to 2017, you know what she was the president of, Sean?
A bank?
Nope. Even better for if you want to try to lose an election. The Clinton Foundation. So, just saying.
And how did she like get through to office then? Was that Wasserman Schultz's old seat?
I think so. Let's see.
This just shows you the current state of like the Democratic Party and how like fucked up it is. I mean, like we criminally reward like incompetence and malfeasance within our own party.
Yep.
We criminally reward people for being stupid. Like, let's just that's one of the things we reward people for. We reward people for not rocking the boat. And then we reward people like Shalala and the donors by letting a small group, for all intents and purposes, like these people that she's placating to, is not the Democratic Party writ large. These are the people who go to the fundraisers on the main line, live in Montgomery County, live in Bucks County, and consider themselves the epicenter of the party.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much like who Shalala is, but in Florida.
Absolutely. Look, and this just goes back to reading.
This is how the state parties work everywhere. We reward incompetence. We put weak people like throughout this whole entire structure, and it's just a pipeline for the stuff we're seeing now. And again, this goes back to what I said a few weeks ago that pissed a lot of people off, and also didn't really piss people off. But this is the type of party we get when we reward people who work for campaigns and don't have a vested interest in the working class, building a movement, or like interest in like your base.
Right, right.
I mean, this is like we reward the same people over and over and over again.
Well, I mean, look,
like the same set of grifters, the Ploofs, yep. The Thomas Perez's. Like, this is a whole entire institutional rot within our party.
Right. I mean, like this is you know, this is Ryan Grimm's book, right? This is at the center of Ryan Grimm's book. Ryan Grimm's book, We Got People, We've Got People, like, charts this, right? Charts this logic that emerged, right? And again, Pelosi is one of the people that it's at the center of this, about the shift and the privilege that's put on, say, donors and put on money and this kind of insider stuff. And Donna Shalala has been an intricate part of that. So whatever it is. So, but the good news is that we've got some truth tellers kind of out there that are kind of helping us see through, you know, the myths that are being created by the Democrats. You know, Sean Hannity, for example, is out there speaking the truth to power and the Fox News every single week. Right, Sean?
Absolutely. 100%. I changed my Twitter handle. If people didn't realize.
I saw that.
Did you see what I changed it to?
Yeah, I forget what it is right now, but
give me breadcrumbs or give me death.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Which is like an appropriate like pandemic response at this point.
So I'm just going to read this. This is from Vox. The study kind of looks like, but this is exactly so. Throughout the coronavirus pandemic, media critics have warned that the decision from leading Fox News host to downplay the outbreak could cost lives. And a new study provides statistical evidence that in the case of Sean Hannity, that's exactly what happened. The paper from economists Leonardo Burstyn, Akash Rao, Christopher Roth, and David Yanagazawa Draught, I guess, focused on Fox News programming in February and early March. At the time, Hannity's show was downplaying or ignoring the virus, while fellow Fox host Tucker Carlson was warning viewers about the disease's risk. Now, again, we should remember Tucker Carlson is a white nationalist, so just don't forget that. But nonetheless, on here, he was actually warning of this. So using both a poll of Fox News viewers of age 50, over 55 and publicly available data on television watching patterns, they calculate that Fox viewers who watch Hannity rather than Carlson were less likely to adhere to social distancing rules, and that areas where more people watch Hannity relative to Carlson had higher local rates of infection and death, like upwards of, 21%.
And you know what the best thing about this? Like, it's bad. Like, this is not good. This is bad. But, like, Sam Cedar literally said, like, 6 weeks ago.
Yes.
By, like, June or July. Now he was off in his estimates. He said by, like, June or July, you're going to be able to make a map and create a map of people who watch Fox News and compare that map to people who have coronavirus.
Yep.
And start, like, pinpointing, like, clusters of this.
Yep.
And, like, as I said in the first segment, you know, Governor Wolf put out, you know, patting people on the head with his plans to reopen the state, you know, keeping quelling the dissent that's happening. You know, I think a lot of stuff's like not going to happen. Like in 3 weeks, we're going to be having another fucking rural pandemic in the state because of what happened on Monday. I mean, there are clearly people who are not following any social distancing guidelines whatsoever. You know, and I saw like there was there was a state senator, Judy Ward, there who is a nurse, and she voted for the bills to reopen everything last week. So just juxtapose those two together. And when she spoke at the rally, she said, "Wow, I am actually surprised that no one here are wearing masks." And said that to, it's just like throwing meat into a lion's den.
Was she wearing a mask?
No, she wasn't.
Oh my God.
But like, okay. So like the way they had it set up, like they had they were on the steps.
Right.
So
like, they were removed. Right. Yeah.
They were removed from these people, encouraging the protest, but like they weren't with the protesters. Yeah. So like, I mean, there
that's
are Democrats.
That's insane.
Why did they, let the legislators speak from the steps with no one around them? I mean, I think that they should have, at least if you're going to be out there speaking, you should be
get down in there, man.
And the people should be at least like 5 or 6 feet away.
Yeah, be with your representatives. Represent.
I mean, it was just like watching it was just, yeah. And so she got booed mercilessly, but like, no, like these people aren't following social distancing from anywhere in the state, like in the rural parts of the state. I mean, these people are living like it's not happening.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts.
When your county, we'll just wait until like, you know, some county in the northern tier only has 5 ICU beds, well, and 30
exactly.
people show up to the hospital with needing help.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think that's where we're headed. I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, I wish I could say otherwise.
After last week, yeah. After Monday, I was just like, these people are.
Yeah. That's right.
I know. No, I mean, I don't blame Matt Brad for wanting to stay inside the whole time.
No, but remember, like, it was his corporate overlords made him do it. Otherwise, he definitely would have been out there. A little cue ball. But yeah. So that's good. So, yeah, and so we shall see. I'm looking forward to, from Sam Cedar was actually saying that there's been some lawyers that are already kind of prepping for lawsuits actually against Fox News for exactly this reason. Especially if they start correlating the data and they can show that there's a direct correlation, which I think those lawsuits, if they run into kind of whatever technical issues of the law things, I think they should be brought because I think they need to be held accountable right across the board. But anyways, all right, well, that's all we got for this part. So we're going to turn in today's last call. We just got a couple things here for last call today, but we're going to do it anyway. So we'll be back just in a couple minutes. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll see you in a couple minutes for this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out to Coop podcast. Today's last call. And just one more time for all those people out there who refuse to believe that the coronavirus is a thing.
You are an idiot.
Just had to do that one more time for everybody. Yes, once again, it's today's last call where we talk about beer news, space news, and everything else that's kind of on there. You know, I tried to avoid entirely the discussion about the mining of asteroids, but I actually slipped it into the segment two today because I knew that would have been a little far afield and kind of put me in the kind of like nut job kind of camp myself. But I do think that's something actually we're going to see coming up as a certain kind of solution coming up in the future. But regardless, cool news this week. My daughter and I actually got to look at some of the images on this. Hubble Telescope is celebrating its 30th anniversary. It's been in the sky for 30 years, and it's pretty remarkable. I have to say, it's like I was, you know, you heard me say ahead of time, I was looking at some of the images of, say, nebula and kind of different formations that were produced from telescopes before Hubble was launched, and then looking at the Hubble images, and it's like, it's remarkable. I mean, it really is absolutely astonishing. Looking at, we spent some time, my daughter did her, like in third grade, they do like kind of galaxy, kind of solar system project. And like when my son did his, he did his on Mars. And it was like, that was a whole lot of fun. And with these models that we built and out of styrofoam and things. And then my daughter wanted to do nebula, right? She had to get like special permission from the teacher because like, well, that's not in our solar system. But she's like, I really want to do it, right? And the teacher's like, well, what is it? You know what a nebula is? Of course, you know, because I geek out on this stuff with my daughter. Like we watch International Space Station videos and things like this. And so she's like, well, it's a gaseous cloud that's kind of out. And she's like, well, okay, we'll see if you can do. So that was a lot of fun. But going through and looking at some of those images and kind of continuing to see them from the Hubble has just been astounding. So, you know, happy 30th anniversary to the Hubble telescope. Like I mentioned too, as well up above, that the James Webb telescope is going to be kind of launching. I think it might be this summer, but, you know, everything might be changed. I actually have a wallet that's got these kind of like hexagon gold things on it. That's the way that the telescope is going to look. So that's going to be kind of really cool to see an additional telescope up there. There's been back and forth about whether or not they're going to retire the Hubble telescope and they want to, whether there's going to be funding for it. They've had to repair it a couple times, but it's just pretty amazing. So, like I said, the Science Channel has got a documentary released on Sunday called Hubble 30 Years of Discovery. Worth checking out. There's actually a whole bunch of other things that you can find, like a NASA's website. They're doing a celebration. They're supposed to be this big celebration. Remember last week we talked about how it was also like the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 13, and now we've got the Hubble kind of coming after that. So NASA's doing a bunch of stuff online celebrating the Hubble telescope, so do check it out. Other news in Pennsylvania that could distract us. We remember the epidemic from last year that had everybody kind of going crazy and doing all sorts of kind of things that they wouldn't normally do as they were walking down the pathways. Is that the lanternfly has spotted lanternfly has reappeared down in Philadelphia. Now the stomping warnings are coming out again, getting prepared, remembering how to recognize the egg hatches or thatches or whatever they call them that are on the trees and how to get rid of them and be on the lookout because they are coming. So if you're looking for a way to, get rid of some of that frustration of having to stay at home and having to kind of like have nothing to do, stomping on lantern flies looks like it is going to be a sport, that, and I, you know, frankly, I think it should be a new TikTok challenge, if you ask me, but that's just me. So that's coming up there. I do have to say that Free Will has got Mango Wheat back in stock this week. Mango Wheat is always one of their kind of go-to kind of end of like spring is here, summer is coming kind of things. It is it's their first batch, and they go through multiple batches over the summer. It's the first batch of the spring summer seasonal that is kind of just released and kind of are just kind of out on the line. Mango Wheat, and I'll kind of read it for you. quite simply named. This is our wheat ale based on our wheat ale base brewed with mangoes. One of our most nostalgic beers in our portfolio. This beer dates back to bottling days of past. The crisp, refreshing, and dry ale is packed full of mango flavor and aroma, and is perfect accompaniment to warm days ahead of us. An easy 5% ABV. They actually did. I remember it was one of the kind of early ones that they bottled when their brewery was still in the basement and their tasting room was still in the basement in this kind of like, you know, dank little basement area. Mango wheat was one of the early ones, so that's what that stuck around. I'll be honest with you, is that mango wheat has not always been my top one, right? But I always have some, like, at the beginning of the summer, because it does feel like, you know, that kind of nice freshness that's going here. Yeah. So there you have it. The also thing this week for Earth Day this week, they also released what remained of their Barrel Age Flower Series, which I forgot to mention up top. So it's the 2018 Barrel Age Flower Series. They had some bottles that were left over. They have the 2018 Chamomile. That's kind of available, the Dandelion, the Honeysuckle, the Lavender. All of them come in at about 5.7 ABV. They come in, I believe they're, let's see, they kind of go a couple of, yeah, there's not many bottles of them, so I don't know how many of those are going to be left by the end of this week. So it looks like they only had a couple dozen of each of the bottles that are out there. But they do have a bunch of their great bottle releases that are there. You can get those at freewillbrewing.com/store. And please, you can go ahead there and pick them up if you like. You will have to order ahead of time, pay ahead of time, and you kind of pick up at the door. You can't sit around and drink it because of, you know, the answer to that. So, Sean, it was a big week for you, though, too, as well, in terms of celebratory kind of like fun spring is coming kind of thing, too.
Not really.
I thought this was like Christmas for you.
Well, Monday was 420, but I was so exhausted afterwards. Like, I needed like 2 days to like recover from the protest. Like, physically recover from the protest. I said it last week and I'll say it again. Monday was pretty much like a fascist march and rally through our neighborhood. Really enjoyed how our neighbors reacted. Their trucks and their cars going out onto the streets, like side streets that lead you out to the city where they wanted to exit, all had fuck Trump signs up and everything, is like, get the fuck out of our city, like, go home and stuff like that. Like, no, these people weren't welcomed. I was walking back, I had some of my neighbors sitting out on the sidewalk telling people to go fuck themselves as they were leaving. Did you see that whole argument that popped up on my Facebook
or
Twitter account?
No.
So this guy from Deloitte who has
from
been
where?
Like Deloitte.
Which Deloitte?
Deloitte is a it's an IT contracting firm.
Oh,
international,
okay.
IT contracting. They have a lot of contracts with the state of Harrisburg or a city of with the state of Pennsylvania here in Harrisburg.
Gotcha.
This one guy was like,
sorry, I'm not an insider like you are.
So I put up the picture of fuck Trump that like my neighbor had, and here, like, we've been neighbors for like 5 years and never said anything. She's like, oh, you like my sign? I'm like, yep, that's why I'm taking a picture of it. And so the guy was like on Twitter, he goes, do people have to really use that language? And I'm like, yes, fuck these people. And he's just like, that's not like a really good argument to make.
Well, you know what I have to say?
You are an idiot!
What else can I say?
And here, like, this guy was like trying to make, like, I'm against like people using language on both sides of the aisle, and here he's like retweeting like Crenshaw and stuff like that.
I hear that garbage, and it just like my eyes start to bug out of my head.
And so someone responds like, if you can't just say fuck these people, if you don't agree with that, then you are just like part of the problem.
My God. Speaking of language, did you happen to see the video that I posted this week from Vic D. Beteto?
No.
Maybe we're going to go out to that today instead of our regular go out, because I think it's a worthwhile catharsis to kind of to head us out in there. So I think it was As I wrote, I posted it on Facebook, say, this is what it sounds like inside my head most days these days. Say, this is my Utica voice. Right? So kind of play a little bit of that on the way out then.
And like, I haven't like cursed anyone out in a few years. You know, that changed on Monday. Yes, there were people going like on the side street I was walking down, like getting into their cars from the rallies. And I just like went up to the person. I was like, you all can go fuck yourselves. And they had kids in the car and everything. I was like, you disease carrying motherfuckers, get out of my neighborhood. And stay out. Like, no, I feel like that's the type of like discourse these people need to get through their heads that they're not welcomed in our community.
Yeah.
I mean, like, do you want fascists marching through your neighborhoods? I mean, that's pretty much like who showed up were like the far right, alt right people.
It's true. It's true. I mean,
It was 5 hours of horns blaring through the neighborhood, a cacophony of just nonstop cacophony of horns, trunk horns, car horns, and stuff like that. And like you had, our neighbors were complaining about just being mentally fatigued and having headaches because of dealing with this all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just, yeah, it was just, it. Like, fuck these people, and that's pretty much how I'm winning the show.
There you go.
No, there's just no space for civil discourse with these people.
No, there's not. There is not. I was just realizing that I was going to play us out with that, but I don't think that if I play it from my on my desktop that you could actually hear it. So you won't get to have the benefit of it. So... I'll just direct everybody. I just sent you the link to it so you can check it out on your own time, and maybe I'll put a link to it in into our show notes. But it was good. I'm not going to say any more about it. I think I've been playing around with it. I had so much sound this week. That I've been playing around with, like, how to actually, you know, do some stuff with that sound again. But I don't know. I didn't do it, obviously. So here we are. So I'm going to stop talking about it. But, yeah, I think Sean said it, and I'll leave it on this. You are an idiot. And if you don't like the language, I don't know what to tell you. Go someplace else. Stay off Sean's Twitter, would you? Yes. All right, man. Anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, there we have it.
I'm just trying to get through the LCB website.
No, there you go. How you doing with that?
I don't get like why they're restricting access to the LCB website to only like a few hours a day because of the volume of orders. Like, just, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's probably the website's so probably like 20 years old where it can't handle.
Yeah, and I'm really, it's really frustrating that they didn't make this a top priority of their administration. I mean, I think it's, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I'm sorry for the inconvenience, Sean. I think you should start tweeting at Governor Wolf right now.
I actually did. It's like, yeah, but when can we use the website? Fetterman tweeted about like the LCB system expanding its curbside pickup to everything. I was like, okay. Now can we use the website?
Right now can we use the website? Did you say that?
Yes, I did.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, all right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning in for yes, another episode of Out to Coop Podcast. This is Ken Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here with Sean Kitchen once again. And we are kind of continuing in our little kind of quarantine little area of the interwebs. And we'll keep on going. So we hope everybody is staying safe and staying healthy. Hoping to God that that we don't get more of the nut jobs that are out there, kind of the super spreaders out there trying to think that whatever, they're taking back their liberty or something like this and causing kind of even more of a catastrophe that's there. My heart goes out to those folks who are right now who are struggling with the virus itself or have family members who are doing this. And Sean talked about his own aunt last week, which you said she's doing better, Sean, right?
Yes. So she was taken off her medication this week. They're looking at weaning her off her oxygen mask over the next several days. She just has to recuperate and get her body up. But they think, you know, here's hoping that you know, it's been 2 weeks since she's been in the hospital. So for me, it feels like the longer this goes on, the better chances of her getting out are.
Yeah.
Which it may sound bad, but the average, I mean, like the average hospitalization is within, you know, 12 to 20 days.
Yeah.
For this. And I think like once we hit this week, I think hopefully we'll be able to have her home sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, here's hoping. I mean, and thank you to all the kind of, you know, the nurses and doctors and staff members and technicians and things who are kind of really on the front lines that are kind of getting us all through this. Thank you to the delivery workers. Thank you to the people that are still making, say, pickups and takeups possible in our food service industry. For those folks who are, say, delivering packages to our door, the real kind of frontline workers, you know, and I just hope, as I'll leave this as a way to kind of close out today, is that if I, you know, going back to some of the things that Naomi Klein was saying right at the top of the show in our intro, is that right now we're being spotlighted, those folks who actually kind of make our society run as it is. And very often those are some of the folks that are paid the least, have the least amount of respect, and that often get kind of brushed aside. And I want to thank all those folks. And I think that all of us, when we come out of this on the other side, whether it's a few months or a couple of years, that those people are going to be first and foremost in our minds when we're thinking about restructuring this economy. So anyways, it's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks again for tuning in. Remember, you can become a member at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RC Press. You can become a member as little as $5 a month. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your consideration. Thank you for all that you do. We're thinking about you. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We are on our way out for yet another weekend. Coming to the end of April. Woo. See ya!
Are you confident that we won't go right again after this crisis, that we might go left?
Oh, I'm not confident about it at all.
Well, you sounded confident a moment ago, and I wanted you to fill us all with
open optimism.
I mean,
what I'm saying is that it is a choice, and that left, you know, our system left to its own devices will exploit this crisis to make to deliver a much less equal society than we have right now. It absolutely will try to impose austerity to pay for the corporate bailouts that we're seeing right now. The reason why I have hope, which is different, I think, than being hopeful, the reason why I have hope is because I do think that we're seeing some amazing organizing among very underpaid yet crucial actors in our economy. And I think that we need to be thinking about how we support and amplify those workers in this moment. We also need to recognize that we live in a time of overlapping and intersecting crises, and there is the climate crisis. And so one of the things that we're seeing right now is what is possible when you actually recognize that you are in an emergency.